And sitting around there, you can't help but hear somebody. You know, you got these friends, and they're working on you. Then you got a friend. What you want to do is you get next to Tom Allen. First thing he tells you, leave. That's right.
He's run from him. Get away.
But one nice thing about these guys is that they'll let you see their readouts, but they won't give you any. They won't talk. Dick will never talk about it. Might, after he loses it once in a while, when I shoot, but he don't know. He said, "Well, there's what you see is what you get. You want to look at my room? There. Same way with Greg May. Tom sometimes will talk. I don't know. Maybe you haven't. Maybe you gave that up. What are you talking about? You still talk?
I try to avoid it.
Good for you. But Tom was always right on his first decision, and most of you are too. When you make that clear-cut first decision, that's the way it's going to be, then run up and make that bet, and don't start second-guessing yourself. And above all, don't listen to anybody. These guys, one of the few combinations, but they're always kidding each other. They're really not talking about the races. They're just telling each other how stupid they are. Or really, what they're doing is the reverse. They're telling each other how bright they are, but they're you know, he won 5 races in a row because he finds there's an early bias at Gulfstream. He's not going to fight it. Until that early bias goes, he's going to win it. Why fight reality? But it turned out that most of those horses were in his top 2 anyway. So usually the bias in your selection process usually have a lot in common. Any questions on this? You going to do it?
Yeah. Money management. They so attentively, and they say, "Oh, we're going to do that." And then 2 weeks later, "I'm going to start it tomorrow, Dick."
Well, next week. He's going to hear tomorrow. There's one fellow that you know in this room, and I'm real proud of him. Turn him around, watching me do this, Don Delmar. He's the guy who says he spent all his time finding out that there was never a winner at Del Mar with over 70% median one time. Over 70% median and so he had all these papers. Huge thing. He didn't use computer as he drew with yellow and green, wonderful line. The first race we're sitting there and he bets 2 horses with a median over 7. I said, "Why'd you do that?" "Well, I thought this time, why do you keep all those records?" But he was amazed because I used his readouts, and I guess he got a lot of confidence when he used their readouts. And they don't think they're any good. And made all this money there, and he said, "Geez, if you can do that with my Rios, why can't I?" So he's gotten better and better and better now, and he's doing real well. But a lot of people have very fragile egos. Horse players, and I don't like that word, but when you have a fragile ego, you turn yourself into a horse player. But people who would be professional handicappers have the most fragile egos that I've ever met. Most of them. Kind of people who should be handicappers don't become handicappers. They become titans of industry or embezzlers or something.
Some of them go bad and become lawyers. Yeah.
But people who aspire to be handicappers are essentially sensitive dreamer types. They are people who don't necessarily... I'm not saying this is true of everyone, but 67% of handicappers don't get along as well as they might with their job situation, their bosses, their iconic class, their mavericks. They don't fit in socially as well with their crowd, so to speak. Especially in their work station. Because socially you can choose your own friends, but in their work station they have a problem. And they start dreaming. And think, "I'm dreaming of a world in which I don't have to put up with this nonsense, this hypocrisy in this job, and all this crap I have to go through." You start dreaming, and they see figures in the newspapers, win place and show, and all that money that's being paid up, and they want to win. But they're mostly very fragile people. Now, the fragility doesn't necessarily come from that personality warp, which is non-existent. I mean, this guy's gets along with everybody in the world, he's done, and a lot of you do. Well, you're the better class, but I'm not talking about some of the people who will never reach these meetings are fragile, very fragile. And if somebody tells them something, counter to what they have learned, they will immediately try that. They are chasing a dream, and they're not chasing, they've never established reality, which is why Dick says, buy a notebook. It's cheap. Establish your reality in notebook. That's how I kept myself in line. Daryl Martin and I use those sheets, and we pile them up, and we throw them on the floor, and every time we get feeling fragile or weak, we pull out 20 races and see how we did. And we pile them up by our body like he cut, and you wake up feeling like sweating, worrying, pull 20 out and say, hey, I am in a losing cycle. Keep reinforcing yourself, and records is the only way you can do it. See, guys, you say, oh, gee, what'd you do last 100 races? Oh, geez, I really did real well. Gosh, boy, it's really working good. And I had a guy who was telling me how I've done the no-no. You said not to use synergism and energy together, and I've been doing it. I know I shouldn't, and I'm going to get my records up today. Sorry, I can't go to New Orleans. I'm broke. The reason is the guy's doing everything we told him not to. He's confessing. He can't go to New Orleans because he's broke. I knew some guys who were too broke to go to Santa, to Las Vegas last April, November, who were too broke to go to that seminar, who lived in Las Vegas, who are now going to New Orleans. That's how long it takes. What's November to now? They were shaky financially. They were flaky, shaky. Now they're strong. Because they keep records. Why do they keep records? Because you can't have energy without keeping records, unless you're in defiance of your contract. But everybody who sends those records, they get heard back from me if they're doing badly, and I get on their case, and I say, Jay, call this son of a gun, get him up here. Or if it happens to be back east, I call somebody back east to make the trip, and they get with them. Forcing people to keep records is at least half of energy's power. Forcing them do something that they fit. Now, why do you feel shaky when you're handling? Whether you belong to that social order of people who are sensitive and who are a little bit antisocial, I'm not offending them.
No, I got to meet my wife.
Oh, I'll meet her. Why is it? Because how many of you, now in your heart, don't give me the. Don't tell me what I want to hear. How many of you really down in your heart think that betting on horses is gambling? Only three.
Room full of liars. What do you know?
We've certainly put it in to you long enough. But then talk about deep in your heart. Supposing after you've lost a few races, after you're down in the dump, when you think the world has caved in on you, you just lost $500 and all your horses got disqualified or came. Then how do you think it's gambling? Now we're going to look closer to the truth. When we're doing well, having been admonished about, I don't think it's gambling. Hey, this is investing in my God. I walk up there and they give me this package and I got to turn on the dust. As soon as we lose, the shame factor comes in, the guilt. The shame. And suddenly it's gambling. And it's all, geez, mother, I'm sorry. Why did I listen to you? Guilt. Because subconsciously we've been had it put into us since we were infants, and it's gambling. What we're doing is gambling. It's wasteful activity. And you always feel more guilt and shame when you are doing something innately against your childhood training. So whenever you get that feeling, oh, it's really is gambling, that's Dr. Gordon Pratt. This is gambling, I'm losing, it's gambling, and it's not investing, and oh gosh, and then somebody has to bolster you, and you go off, and you go a fugue somewhere, whatever happens, and you make your comeback. But every time you get weak, every time you get hurt, what does a little child do? It runs to mommy. It gets hurt. Well, mommy, what you're running to is the adapted situation where you're going to comply with what mommy told you when you were a kid. It is gambling. And it's, mommy, please take me back. I'm sorry. And then pretty soon you wake up and say, okay, hell you, mom. I'm going out there and do it again. But that's what it is. Now, does that happen? Does that happen for you in the stock market or a mutual fund? No. Just you, huh?
Yeah.
Just me. I look at the damn last few days to see these funds going down and down. I don't think it, I don't get guilty. I accept what a stupid jerk you are enough to cut out 4 days ago. I didn't do anything sinful. America's, all America's doing it. That's noble investing. It goes down. See, if you lose $3,000 at the races, you feel it. Oh, God, would you lose $3,000 in one day on the stock market? So what we need to do...
Well, the difference is the race, when that's over, it's over. Now, on the market, you know, you may come back.
And you may lose the rest.
That's a good point that you brought up, Phil. Don't think of a race as a race. Think of it as 20 races. And this is just a cycle within that 20.
A day in the market.
It's a day in the market. The winner, make up a name for your winners. Your winners are General Motors or Mitsubishi or whatever. And your second place horses are AT&T, and your show horses are something else. And say, well, my show has a generic name. It's not Vander Crabtree or Swifty LaRue or whatever the horse's name is. It's a generic. What does it do over 20 races? Now, if you are losing over a long cycle, you don't come up with a coma, you're crazy. The doors are always open. You don't have to just make an appointment. There's ways to correct people. I'm proud to say we've corrected and helped an awful lot of people, but some people need a refresher course. Sometimes they go out there and they, you know, for every good I can do by therapy, one friend can undo in 10 minutes. One good buddy. Honest to God, I would never, I'll go to the races with my friends, and I'll use the arena, but when they start talking horses, I go to the popcorn stand or somewhere, because I don't want to hear about that stuff. And I don't want to hear about, did you notice that the new turf track has got the it's early? Well, that's another subject I've got to bring up here, linear vision. We're out of the linear visual era. The new turf track isn't as early as you think it is. It's still standard as winning on the lead. The energy demands are still more towards sustain. The guy who comes to me and says, something wrong with this program, it says this is a sustained horse and he won on the wire to wire and wants his money back where he wants me to fix it. Oh, would you correct this? The algorithms of the program are the algorithms you're handicapping by. So the program says he's early, and you think he's not, he's still early. Yes, sir.
There was a race set where one named Sonny Blossom set the record at Santa Anita, and I looked at the baseline and it said sustained pace presser for the race where it won the where it got the record. And it went wire to wire.
Fine. And you're just justifying what we're saying. What he's saying is what we said for years. If you swale when it won the Belmont on wire to wire, the horse, just because he goes wire to wire, is not making him an early horse. It just means that the other horses let him get a lead and he sustained it to the end. They were waiting for him to die. Oh, he's going to die. He's early. Well, he's not early. He's not going to die. And they're waiting and the jockeys are, well, the size three hats. Don't carry too much inside. You've got the greatest jockeys in the world sitting there behind the horse, and he's going out and he's getting more late than what he's going to die. You know, they don't even whip him. He's going to die. Yeah, he's going. And he wins. And then I say, geez, God, maybe he ain't going to die. Get up! Get up from the thing. Too late. You know, guys tell me, you can't. How can you? I'm going to get this in Vegas. How can you guys possibly say you win races when you don't put in the jockey and trainer factor? We got to go through that. I'm hiring three assistants to answer those. If I'm going to let somebody who the best of which wins 19 to 20% of his races dictate my handicap. Now, let's address the trainer jockey situation as it really is. How many times have you had a winner that was not adequately trained? Would a horrible trainer give you a pace line that you would put in very often? No. By the very nature of the pace lines you're selecting the horses that have been the best trained and the best ridden, right?
Sometimes
so you got them already. You don't have to only put in five more points because it's Lafitte Tenkai being trained by Mike Mitchell. But you go, boy. And these guys. Have you ever seen a trainer jockey statistician guy win? Statistician? I never have. I know the best. They don't win, but they surely like to sell those trainer jockeys. You got the best trainers. You got the best jockey. And you, of all people, are the best handicapper. You know, you like trainers tell us we're better than they are. Charlie Whittingham says you're a lot better than I am. Hey, you can scratch my horse if you don't like it. I can't after the deadline. If you don't like it, in other words, scratch it, you don't bet it. The most important thing is that all of you now are capable of it. Any of you are not capable of winning with anybody that new, you're not capable of it yet? Okay, you're all capable of it. When you don't win consistently, it's because you don't keep records, you don't bet consistently, and you don't have that absolute faith in yourself that after a couple of wins, you don't change your whole perspective. Mm-hmm. Once you change, when you change your perspective after a couple of three losses, that's when you need your perspective the most, and then you give it up. You're just asking for more losses. So our real problem isn't getting enough winners. Our real problem is attacking it from a point of view where we mix information with absolute dedication and knowledge that we're good. We're better than the best. And the most we ever had consistent winners with synergism, 65% of the people had it. That's high. 5% of the general public wins on a given day, 2% regulars. So the guys who won only 65% of our people, that 35% of any group is going to fail. I mean, by statistical norm, you all know that. Now, with energy, happily, because of the reports they send us and the program, but 93% of the ones who report. Dick tells me that some people won't send me their reports, therefore I have no way of knowing what they're doing or controlling them. Why do they win at such a high rate? Program partly. But hey, if they could mess it up. If I gave those same people energy, and I did not make them send me reports, I did not monitor them, those people would figure a way to mess it up if they wanted to. And most people want to mess up reality. I mean, I heard some questions today that have nothing to do with this. Like the isolated problem. Well, geez, you got this slow horse, and he comes up on top and he didn't win the race. I said, well, why do you bring that up? Why don't you bring up the seven who did win? What did they have? People get caught up in one race, one loss, and it's almost an obsession with them to wonder why. And remember, you know as much as I do now, mostly. It's just that you haven't organized the information that you know and an ability to answer your own question. The only difference between you and me and so-called experts is that experts have been asked so many questions that they know the answers. I mean, verbally they can answer. Whereas you, when you ask yourself a question, you don't have to verbalize it. You don't have to answer yourself. So you get lazy and don't answer it. Write yourself 20 questions sometime, and then get out 20 races and find the answer. There's almost no question you can't answer. That doesn't mean we won't answer your questions. Jimmy, the Bradshaw's hat phone is on busy all day long. But think in terms of trying to answer your own question. Any questions on this? What we've gone over. There's some interesting articles in here by Huey Moll, which would reinforce what we have talked about today. Someone says, have you ever tried to play specialty? Well, naturally, we've tried it, we wouldn't be selling. I can Dutch play sorts of. I want to just a strange track, let's say. They don't want a strange track, and I'm lazy, and I'm tired, and I've done a seminar. I don't want to go through, get the computer out, and go through the business of picking what an easy road. I'm going to take some of these things in here, which are much easier to proceed, and bet place and show only. Look at the true risk thing that he is given. The lowest odds and the highest odds. Say 3-1.
What page is that?
3-1 is it's on page 27. Now this is what I'm looking at. It's probably several of them. I'm on page 27. Okay, let's do about on the second chart down. You see, let's look around the 3-1, 5-2, that area. 3-1, well, you have a 25% true risk chance of winning. You have a 45.3 chance of placing and a 62.5 chance of show. That's a true risk line. That's not Mitchell's morning line or somebody else's thing. That's the true risk line, which is what it really is. So I'm a strange track, and I don't want a lot of money. I'm tired, but I'd like to pick up a few bucks for dinner and cocktails or. Used to be grills, we can't do that anymore. So it'd be like oysters now.
New Orleans. Hoping for the grills.
I'm going to New Orleans. So now, for no work at all, I got a 45%, 3-1, I got a 45.5 chance of making a place bet and having a to my 25% chance. But supposing your average mutual is, let's say, 5-1, or nine, let's make it 9-2. You are getting at 3-1, you're getting odds of 9-2 with the odd, with the true risk of 3-1. If your average mutual is $11, let's say, or if it's $9 and something, you're not taking the 22-41 risk, you're having the 25, probably closer to the 28-49 risk. If average to the public gets 5-20, so yeah. Take 5-2 for the public, and if you're getting $9, average mutual, you have the public's chance of winning the race at 5-2. You have of getting a 9-2 or 7-2, whatever your ratio is. $9, 7-2. So at 5-2, the risk is 28.5% on the win, between 49 and 50 on the place. But instead of getting those, the 5-2 odds, you're getting 9-2, $9. Take your mutual and then look in the column where the public gets it. But look at your, this is what will happen if you just did it every day of the week. You have at 9-5, 58, just a plain statistical, nothing to do with how good you are. Statistically, you're going to win 58.4% of your place, the 36% win, and 73.8 show. So you look there, if you're getting the higher prices, but you're functioning at that level, you will see why Dick made that kind of money in place. You know, when you hear him talk, you think, well, that's Dick Schmidt. But it's right here in these facts. Dick gave, was your average showing you?
I have no idea. 540.
560.
No.
That was my
highest. Oh, I see. Yeah, that's right.
No,
it probably won't. It might not have been even
$3. Let's take place then. Give us something. It doesn't matter to me what it is. Just give me a number.
Place would have been about, $5 or $6.
Okay, let's just make it $5. Okay. His average mutual was 590. What is that? That's
2-1.
Call it 2-1. Okay. The public's 2-1 horse pays what, Dan? It's on the other tourist table. Okay. It pays. It's got a 0.33 chance of winning on the course and having a place. Now you're getting 2-1. So you would get what the public would be getting in what? Even odds are 65. You're getting their win ratio. What was your win ratio?
Place ratio.
Percentage.
54% of the
okay.
Ball.
Okay. Where does the public win 54, place 54% of the time? At 4 to 5. No, that's win. Where do they place at 54%?
2 to 1.
Okay, doing 54%, he's right at his true risk line then. He equaled his true risk line, which tells you that he's going to place between 55 and 56% of the time, and he's going to get those odds. Now, if you find that your price you're getting is equivalent to the public's price at 6 to 5, you've got a real big edge on the public. But Dick's just cash. Now, he didn't even handicap those. He didn't deserve to do better than the public. He's just doing it that casual way. So he's doing... He's taking advantage of the true risk line of the public. Does everybody understand what the true risk is? Look at the odds. Let's do it on this other one. And well, I wrote a little thing in here to do it on page 22. Let us say you're winning. Let's just take a win here now. You're winning 62.5% of the time. And you're getting a $9 average mutual. You should be getting 3 to 5. You're getting 4.5 to 1. You should be getting 3 to 5 at your win level. Understand the point I'm trying to make here? No, I'll do it again.
We're using
the true values of 62% win percentage, you should be taking 3 to 5. Your mutual should be whatever 3 to 5 is. It's what? 360. You should be getting an average mutual of 360 at your win rate. But you're getting $9. See what I'm saying? The true risk that you're taking should yield you 360, but it's yielding you $9. So you've got now. Whatever the difference between $3.60 and $9 is, $5.40 edge on the public. That's what you really need to know, and that should carry some of you through your tragic moments of when you have these melancholia periods when you have some bad times. You still now that's value. That's built-in value. You don't have to wait and play the third and fourth choice to get value. You've already got value because you should be getting $3.60 on your horse. You're getting $9. Now, if your average mutual is 6, then you're still better than the public. Or should be higher. So look at that. Every time you start feeling blue, look at your true risk levels, probabilities. Look at where you are. If you were doing that, your probability of placing is tremendous. You have a 62% chance of placing at your level of mutual as opposed to what it really is. At 5 to 1, it's 33%. 4 to 1, it's 38%. But you have a 62% chance instead of a 38% chance automatically by the standard extension table of what your win price is and your place price. Follow it. Take your place percentage, or just take your win percentage and use the standard extension table to see how often you place. It's pretty close to what you're getting to place. If your average win is $9, what's the standard extension table say places, Dan? Just from your own memory, I don't think it's here.
Next page. 41%.
And just figure your average place price now. You can use the standard extension table that tells you the payoff. Oh, here it is, your place payoff. And we'll have to interpret these because you have now your total win is let's say it's 9 to 2, you want to make it 5 to 1, 9 to 2. Let's make it 7 to 2. payoff is 54 cents on the, that, what's that mean in real money, Dan?
480.
480. I'm glad he's here because these guys are doing to the dollar. 480, you got a 480 average mutual. If your average winning mutual is just on that horse alone, just on the win horse, you got a 480. If you're betting special place horses, but you have, you know what their chances are, you're crazy not to be betting. So do what Dick did. Find out what your place mutual is, unless it's a win horse that places, which you can figure from there. Find out your percentage when you pick the place horse, the isolate the place horse and or show horse, and figure out what your average mutual is and what your win percentage is. And if you're not taking that advantage of that and making money off of it, you're crazy. I'll sign your certificate. I mean, what the heck? I don't have enough money. Hey, if I take $500 to track today, pay $200 to win, and $300 on a wild exact, this tells me he doesn't have a big enough bank. Of course, manure. You got a big enough bank, you're just not budgeting it correctly. You get $200, it's a big enough bank. Because you grow, don't you? I would far rather have a $4 place horse 60% of the time than a $10 win horse 10% of the time. Wouldn't you? So, but play the best of both worlds. Just don't get off into a never land a place and show, bet a bull. And do it the way it's the easiest to do it is to bet your win bets ahead of time. Get them out of your hair so you don't have to start figuring all that. Now start isolating those place and show horses that are going to pay in accordance with your acceptable average mutual. I would say you want 340 minimum to show and 420 minimum to play. Hold out for that. Then you have no problem. And that's easy to figure. The standard extension table is just as easy as go to that computer, put it in the scope of this and this and that. Standard extension table is within 10 cents. Any questions on this?
340 to show.
Is anybody interested in trying to take a little flyer on the price down and do this correctly? Are you interested in doing it? You should. Because really,
it's going off at $200.
Really, if you've got $200, you can do it. And especially if you're a little shaky in wind. How many of you are streaking winners? We still have some streaking winners. Mostly our streaking winners are medical doctors or former gamblers. Streaking winners are, the reason that the doctor raised his hand is the brilliant man. And brilliance, of course, is very, very negative quality in handicapping. Really is. He's so brilliant that he has streaks. He wakes up in a different world, and now he's in a different streak. Whereas a common ordinary guy without any degrees, he's always there, man, same old world every day. But we're gonna scare you. You are just kind of new with it, and your former way of living was kind of gambling. Playing by the seat of the pants and punches and trainer maneuvers and friends in the backstretch. Guys like that. So that's when you're streaky. Dick, are you ever streaky? How streaky? What do you call streaky?
No. I'm sitting here looking at that 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 place house in a row. That's a bad streak. It's just going to happen.
The way you're doing, you don't handicap it, but it's a pretty high all over us. When you don't handicap, you're going to have streaks.
And my streakiness comes in the win end and everything else. You're going to have streaks because the races represent random
streaks. Well, when he's talking about streaks, and I'm talking about streaks. What is your average?
Yeah, I got that one.
What is your average losses in a row? I mean, you got a 5 one time. But what's your general 20 race cycle losses in a row?
Oh, on the win end?
Yeah. 3. We have found that 3 Jimmy and I lost three in a row once, and we went into seclusion. Four, maybe. No, Dan? Three, four, well, your wife, what, two? I don't call three in a row streak, or even four in a row. I'm talking about, here's a guy who goes this week, he got 7 for 9 on Saturday, he got 6 for 8 on Sunday, and he blanked Wednesday, he got 1 winner Thursday, he got 2 winners, and then that's that I call streaking, where you don't have anything close to your usual percentage pattern several days in a row. Now that is something you can cure. That people say, well, that's a streak. That's not a streak. That is an emotional disturbance.
Doing it. Are you really
trying to do what you have to handicap the president?
Very good.
Flexible enough.
Very good.
We were talking about an individual earlier who is fighting the turf wars out there because he wants to handicap it like it's been last year. The year before, it's not the same court. And he's not flexible to include the reality of his handicap.
What happened on these 2 days is that the horses were running to form on Saturday and Sunday, and you did very little work and very little digging because, hey, your 1-1-1s and your 2-1-1-2s, they're all winning the races, and pretty much so on this day. Suddenly, you've got a different quality of horses, and the secretary is not carding the races for the better thing, so the public get a lot of favors, and they're not running to form, and you're still playing the races like you did on these 2 days. That's what Dick's saying. You won't adapt. You won't take a look at how that first race runs, and you won't see what's changing in this day. And you won't go back and say, wait a minute, these aren't the same class. You've got to see what is reality for each individual day. And don't depend on the reality. And winning itself makes you get cocky and makes you think you can do no wrong, and you don't have to really work as hard as you did last time. You say, oh man, I got a bugger. Oh, it's bing, 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 little eyeball scan here. Maybe you put a couple of fractions in here, and then all of a sudden, bang. You've got, every day is just as big a challenge. Suppose a surgeon did that. Well, I did 27 brain operations, 14 prefrontal lobotomies last week. Hey! Oh, what do you got tomorrow? Oh, a little incision here. No, he gets cocky. He washes his hands, he scrubs, he does the whole same thing, and he has that metal set, makes those incisions just as well if he's done 24 lobotomies at 10,000 as if he's working on a charity case. And, it's the same skill, the same analysis of the patient's disorder that he would give on a day where he's going to get rich doing it as on a day when he didn't feel like doing it at all. He's never can use. Now, this doesn't mean they don't make some mistakes. I'm talking about the ideal surgeon. I'm not talking about the you know. We know. But dedicated professional is just as dedicated after he's done it well. I mean, Perry Mason, if he wins the biggest law case in the world, then he gets the credits come up. The next case, you find sloppy. Oh, hell, Dallop. Send a kid to do it. It's easy. Nothing to it. No, he's just as intense when he does that case. I had a father-in-law once. He died of senility. And people kind of avoided him once. Because he got, well, I liked him. And I sat with him, and he kept saying, you know, he called me George. You know George? I said, you know George? That guy, before he got crippled, it used to be pyramids. We watch Ironside every day. And everybody else said, oh, yes, poor old man. He's not a huge arm, right? He was, wasn't he? Well, too bad. He was a lawyer, wasn't he? He wasn't stupid. He was right. That was Perry Mason. But anyway, Perry Mason or any real living professional always conducts the case the same way, whether it's after a big success or a failure. Put the same amount of professionalism. This is a profession. If you treat it like a game, you're gambling, and you deserve to lose. Gamblers do lose. If you think of it as gambling, you've got 2 strikes against you. Because gamblers always lose in the long run. If you think of it as a profession, and it's an honorable profession, for God's sake, it's honorable when you Jess Solis can go into retirement from whenever he used to have a big business, and he can make adequate money, and he can stand up and say, I'm doing something that only... How old were you, in shoes or something?
Steel.
He's in steel. He's a very big man in steel. But there are a lot of people in steel. There's U.S. Steel, Bethlehem Steel, a whole lot of steel. But how many people can handicap as well as he can? He's in a much more exclusive group now. He's hanging around with a bunch of bums, but what the heck? He's still in a much more exclusive group to be a successful professional handicapper than there is to be in the best man in the steel business, right? Don't you feel more pride of accomplishment?
Yeah.
Okay,
I got to drive him home tomorrow.
We have a lot of doctors, and they want this. They dedicate themselves to this, like Dr. Bollinger back there. Between trips to India, he wants to do this just as much as he wanted to be the best physician, surgeon in Northern California. And he dedicates to it. So he makes a few mistakes here and there. He'll get it. Takes doctors a little longer, that's all. Lawyers, they're sneaky. They get it fast. But the higher the IQ of the profession you were in, the longer it's going to take. You know what? That statement. Huh? So if you were a university professor, or you were a neurophysicist, or whatever those guys are, it's going to take you a little longer. But if you're just a plain old sloppy Joe, hey, you can get it in 2 weeks. Now, I'm going to leave the room a while, because when I ask you about problems, I think you're sometimes too kind. I'm not dying this way, so be cruel, but I'm going to let Tom Allen come up here. And I'm going to leave the room, and you can frankly ask him solutions. Now, he's, in writing this book that he's writing, he's come up with some very simplified solutions to some very complex problems, shortcuts, simple answers. So I'll leave, and you ask me any problems you have. Just take the next hour and iron them out with Tom, and Tom will answer.
Yeah, I'll get this one right for where it's going to be worth its weight in gold.
Repeat freely, I shall not be within your shot.
This is driving.
I want to cover some things and amplify some of the things that I said today. The first thing is a question for the group. Did anybody do the first race yesterday? Anybody in the room?
Yeah, I worked it, but I didn't hit it.
Yeah. All right. Bill came up to me this morning and asked me something, and then so I took a look at it. And what this book that I'm writing is all about is kind of a paper and pencil method of... You can actually, it'll stand on its own, but it's far too advanced for everybody. It's so antique for everybody else in this room that I would not recommend it. But I would recommend taking a look at some things that I've discovered by doing this. And let me explain that. First of all, what I've had to do because about... a year ago, we introduced the final fraction ratings, which were decelerated from 5.5 furlongs out to 10 furlongs, and that proved to be pretty successful. And then Tom Barber, maybe 4 or 5 months ago, came up with the idea of putting an early pace rating to the race, early pace being the second call rating. And it was based on a score of 100, 44 seconds flat in sprint, and 100 for 109 flat in a route. And then we came up with the idea of adding those two numbers together to come up with a number somewhere between 150 and 190, which would be the horse's score, or rating, or whatever. Well, when Howard suggested to me that I write what he calls the phase one manual, which is basically trying to implement second call and final fraction together for people that just want to use a piece of paper and a pencil or a calculator as opposed to using a computer. So what I did is I started working with this, and I've been working with it on and off for about 2 years. because when you get to a place like Fairplex Park, where you might see as many as 7 different racetracks coming in one race, how do you say to yourself, who's better? You see horses coming from a racetrack called Sacramento, where they run regularly 108 flats, and then horses that are coming from some of the slower Northern California fairs, where they run 112s. And what equals what? So I didn't really discover anything new. I just probably redid some things and reamplified them. And so when I looked at this race from yesterday, in the first race, I want to tell you how I would handicap this race, because there's a couple of calls in here that have to be made or you never get the race. Now, the horse that won paid $84, I believe. And in my figures, he comes out number 3. And he's number 2 because he's tied with one other horse. Now, the number 1 horse ran 2nd by a nose. The horse that won paid $84, and the one that ran 3rd at 77-1 paid $18 to show. Now, there's a couple of calls here that I had to make. And the reason that these numbers can work well is because I forced myself to read the racing form. And as I got more and more involved with energy and the diamond approach, so to speak, you just shut your brains off and just pull that stuff, all these baselines in the computer, and let the computer figure it out.